Poetry has this incredible capacity, doesn't it, to distill the essence of even the most complex feelings and experiences. It can say so much and yet so sparingly. When Alastair Stewart's partner Jackie died in 2006 with a rare form of leukemia, he and his young son really only had each other, and before them lay that, you know, complex roller coaster ride that's grief. Alastair was left to pick up his own pieces, but also to carry on as a single parent to his son Sam. And his new book, Plain and Pearl, his second collection, I gather, is his poetic and poignant effort to reflect on some of that grisly experience. Alastair joins me now. Welcome, Alastair.
Thanks a lot, Natasha.
Great to have you on the show.
Fantastic.
It was Jackie that inspired this work. Tell us about Jackie.
Jackie was a set designer in a theatre. She was a bit of a genius when it came to art and everything contemporary about art. And she was also one of those people that you could never imagine anything happening to.
You were both born in the same year.
No, she was born in 61 and I was born in 63.
Oh, there you go. And how did you meet?
We met through, you know, inner city Melbourne, you know, mutual friends, all those sort of things. Melbourne in those days, as you probably know, was a very creative place.
It was, I mean, she was, as you say, a kind of genius, but she was also a healthy and a vital person.
Exactly.
I mean, sickness always comes as a shock, but describe that, you know, what unfolded for you when she was diagnosed with leukemia.
The thing that you never quite understand is, or can really project to others is the, I think, just the shock of it and the, how unexpected it is, and yet at the same time, all those little signs that led up to it. Certainly in Jackie's case, it was Sam's first year at school and an exhausting year in many respects. And it was towards the end of the year, so you just imagine, like everyone else, that you're just exhausted, but it was a little bit more than that.
And it was 2 years. I mean, she was diagnosed in 2004. And she lived with that illness for 2 years.
It was a little less than that, but it was certainly like, actually, that's one of the things, like, and I try and do in the book, you know, time goes straight out the door. There's only the intensity of it all and the whole medical process and being in hospital in and out and all so many aspects of procedure and, you know, just little things that are devastating constantly.
But time goes out the door to an extent, doesn't it? When you've got the little clock that is a little boy, I mean, little boys just tick-tock, they remind you with every little growth spurt that time marches on. How old was Sam at the time? He just started school, but how old was he when he died, when she died?
Sam was 7 when Jackie died. He was 6 when it was when he was diagnosed. But once again, like, it was just that sort of formative time, the first year at school, and then a whole year of going and to-ing and fro-ing and trying to do everything. And I suppose, you know, try and imagine what he was going through. But in some respects, you know, he just, you know, continued on. When people are still alive, nothing really changes. You know, people are just sick, if you like.
And there's always,
I think,
the
that's
hope
the unimaginable aspect. That's right, exactly. There is always the hope of recovery. And I can't, you know, stress enough how much that was emphasised.
Out of this, you've written Plain and Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you say that the book and the works you've pulled together in it are very much about trying to restore yourself.
Yeah, that's true.
Go on.
I certainly don't want to give the impression that the book is some sort of, you know, catharsis as such, or some sort of, you know, self-help process. But certainly, it's just trying to get a, it is a perspective. And I mean, I am a writer, and I think throughout the time, I mean, you never stop being that. But everything is just obviously on hold, and then, you know, time changes and things shift, and things begin to formalize, and that is an aspect of art proper that can never, ever be tampered with.
You're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
But was it particularly traumatic finding these particular words?
Without a doubt. I think once you've been... it's another form of grief. I mean, it's part of grief. I'm not sure. I mean, I think grief just continues on and on. I don't think there's any stopping in as such. I think, as I used to say to people, then you just learn to deal with it, you learn to live with it, and you learn to cope with the moments that just fly in from one angle or another and just, you know, knock you over again.
There's a lovely piece, Alistair, that bears the name of the book, Plain and Pearl, and it really describes, the chill in the air and the sound of Saturday footy scores and racing calls. And I was really thinking of Melbourne when I read it. But it really represents a very particular time for you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Well, it's like the first piece where... You know, I suppose I go back out into the world. You spend so much. I mean, the emphasis. There's a sort of one of the images in the book is, you know, being entombed, and that the strongest image, if you like, of say the resurrection, is that the tomb is empty. There is nothing in here. Get out. Go out into the world, and that's what that poem really is. It's about realizing that you walk out there. In that cold and in that shining belt, which is that Melbourne's west at times, out looking out across the third largest volcanic plain in the world, which most people don't realise, and seeing that the world is still out there and that there is also that emphasis on the sort of geological time where, you know, you are looking out onto the world that is, you know, itself frozen in time. And so you have that experience of saying, I will not freeze in time, and that we must live on. And the only way of living on is by walking.
Walking. There's time again, hey. And we will get you to read one of the pieces from the book. But you did have to quite literally step out into the world. And in this new role as a single parent, which is a role that you felt very powerfully, the loneliness and intensity of that role as a father alone is something that you really had to come to reflect on, isn't it?
That's certainly right. It's I just don't think people really. It can't be underestimated the intensity and the explicitness of single parenthood. It's the whole emotional load is just upon you and. I just think that's one of the hardest things. And certainly in my case, you are dealing with the most, complex and devastating elements that life sort of presents. And to me, that is, you know, not only just the sole parenthood side, but raising a son who's doesn't have a mother. And I've had all sorts of strange things said to me over the years, like, oh, well, you know, he's got a grandmother or, you know, he's got an auntie or things like that. And
how does that
various
feel?
Friends. And I just, it just reiterates the ignorance that people have of life.
There's a line in one of your pieces, all night the absence wakes to years in the eternal siege of motherless rituals. And and in another piece, there's in every way, in you always, she will live. So, I mean, your son, Sam, really embodies his mother in many
exactly.
ways.
Exactly. And that's right. You have that period, which is, of course, you know, ongoing. But there's, I suppose, in the first couple of years really you are searching him for her and certainly I wanted to make it really capture that experience of that your son he embodies her and to a whole host of people he is Jackie and at the same time he is very quickly himself, you know, he is his own person, obviously. But that aspect of, you know, I think it emphasises the generational thing that is immediate, so you have an immediate experience of that he is of someone. and then they are of someone else.
Yes.
And so you get a very strong sense of lineage in the true sense of it, in the spirit sense of it, and not in some sort of photographic or, hey, look, at here's my ancestors over here and they were such and such, but just the real rooted sense of humanity and our being in this world.
Sam is a big part of this book. He pops up. His own grief is evident in your verse, in subtle ways, but it's there. And I'd love you to read a piece from the book. We thought we might get you to read Ukulele.
Sure. Do you want me to do it now?
Go for it.
Okay. Ukulele. I played like fleas flying, hopping all over you. Anything that jumps or flies called yucas in Portuguese. Darting over the strings like the fright of baitfish amongst the spearmint calm of Pacific atolls. You used to cry at the songs of island women singers, the baskets of frangipani woven with cavalcino, the children of the carver code returning to their home in carved and tattooed canoes, longing the Great Spirit. We bought him one on his fifth birthday. Four steel strings that bite off fingers. And now he barely plays, though loves Tiny Tim. I heard you sing in him, "Come tiptoe with me."
And there she is again.
Mm.
I know that you've had a rough time trying to work out what this identity of single father is,
yeah.
Not the least because of other people's reactions, as you explained to us earlier. But I also understand, Alistair, that you've become quite the neighbourhood dad. Because Sam's now 14, but there's
a whole coterie
of young boys that really are drawing some support from you. And you wrote in an email that you're supporting other boys struggling with a world obsessed with being neat, clean and good little naplans. It's a time bomb.
Well, I think that says it all, doesn't it? I mean, but, you know, I mean, quite seriously, over the years now, I mean, I have not worked full time. I've been part-time at the best and, you know, the dread of school holidays, for instance, you know, that there's weeks and weeks and...
Parents
and
know it well.
Christmas
I can
holidays.
See some nodding heads behind the glass
right.
in the studio here.
Exactly. And then at the same time, I think for boys, and I'm like a really big believer that the school system has turned into... It's kind of anti-boys in many respects. The whole re-emphasis on, you know, the reading and writing and arithmetic routine and the naplan thing and measuring and commodifying. And look, the whole language is turned into that. And the influence it has now in the education system at times to me is an embarrassment. And then the attitude towards the boys especially is just mind-boggling. You know, the expectation to, you know, them to be sit clean, don't answer back, all the rest of it, you know, it's just beyond comprehension. And certainly in this world that is, you know, the whole internet thing, that the world has shifted so fast and you have the educators, and it's not a criticism of them as such, it's just an observation, that they are, the kids in some respects, are way ahead of them in lots of areas.
Well, they're more
at the same time,
in some ways.
They're more fluid. That's correct. Mm. But I think to some degree kids have always been more fluid, full stop. And so that the technology really allows that to, you know, shooting star material it is at times. And then the emphasis is put back on technology in ways that is ridiculous, like, you know, oh, do everything on your iPad. You know, everything. You know, the magic glass. If in doubt, consult the magic glass. But here's your contract to, you know, sign here on the dotted line, you 12-year-old who should understand everything utterly. Although you would probably need a solicitor to work out some of the jargon and the rubbish talking.
I've so got you on a roll, passionate father that you are.
I think that aspect, look, I'm a poet, and so language, to see language vandalised and, you know, the shrillness of it and the contempt which it regards people's, the messiness which is life, just really, I think that's an aspect too, if the sole parenthood thing, you really, really cop it.
Language, language is your tool. It's your vehicle, and this is a book that you describe as being a book of grace and bridges. We've only got a couple of seconds left, but what is that about?
I think it's important to understand in all this that even in the worst moments, there is grace. That's what we inherit.
I can't think of a better way to bookend this conversation. Thanks, Alistair
Natasha.
Stewart, it's a very rich read, and thanks for sharing it with the world. You know, it's
Mary
a very...
Jig Word and Sound.
That's the publisher.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think it takes a particular kind of courage to, you know, rip open the self and put it all out there in verse. So thanks for joining us on the show this morning.
Thanks for having me, Natasha. Fantastic.
Poet Alistair Stewart, his book is Plain and Pearl, and it's published, as he said, by Mary Jig Word and Sound. Check it out, and we'll put more details on the website. This is Life Matters. Coming up, your calls.